Good morning. Well, it's lovely to see you all and lovely to see some new faces too. So welcome. And let me just explain what we're doing. Over the course of Lent, we have been working our way through each of the days of Holy Week, thinking about the actions of Jesus. And so we started off on Palm Sunday with Jesus entering Jerusalem, hailed as King and Messiah by the crowds of people. That's why the purple cloth is up, that royal colour, and demonstrating against the imperial domination of Rome. On Monday, he enters into the temple, and this time he's demonstrating against the collusion of the temple with that imperial domination. And the crowds are entranced by him and by his teaching. On Tuesday, he teaches all day, and then on Wednesday, he has a rest day at Bethany. Mary comes to him and anoints him, and he says it is a sign preparing for his burial, preparing for what lies ahead. Then Lillian spoke to us last week about that Thursday, the day that they enter the city in the evening to celebrate Passover together. They eat together. It's an intimate meal. And he gives the disciples a new commandment. He says to them, love one another as I have loved you. Serve one another as I have served you. But the atmosphere at dinner is tense. They've entered into Jerusalem in a really discreet way, and they're hidden away in an upper room. They know that Jesus is being watched by the temple authorities. They suspect that they are looking for a way to entrap him. And as they eat together, I wonder if they reflect on the busyness of the last few weeks. Jesus has been teaching them about his own death. He has been saying that he will die, he will be handed over to the authorities. He's been telling them that he will die and then he will be dead for 3 days, but then he will rise again. He describes how he will give his life as a ransom for many, a ransom that will liberate all from bondage and captivity and slavery. 3 times, as he tells them this prediction of his death, he invites them also to partake in it with him. He says to them, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Anyone who wants to be first must be last. You will drink the cup that I am drinking. You will be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. Jesus' teaching in this last few weeks has been about judgment and end times. I wonder if the disciples are reflecting on that anointing by Mary. I wonder if they're scared. I wonder if they are hoping that they can protect Jesus. We know that Simon has already tried to deter him from this route. At the end of the meal, they sing a simple song together, and then they leave to head out somewhere so that Jesus can pray, because Jesus desperately, desperately needs to pray. And they end up then at the Garden of Gethsemane, and the disciples are dead on their feet. They've been on the go for weeks now, and even though they had the rest day yesterday, that's just made them feel even more tired, even more weary, and they have just eaten this massive Passover meal. We know what that's like at Christmas, don't we? They are full of good food. It is late in the evening, and they feel satisfied. And so even though they huddle together against the cold night air in the garden, their heads are heavy and their eyes are drooping. But all of this weariness is in sharp contrast to Jesus, because Jesus is agitated. The text tells us that he is deeply distressed, that he is disturbed and troubled. He says to the disciples, sit here while I pray. I am overwhelmed with sorrow and pain to the point of death. Stay here, keep watch. And he goes a little further on and he falls to the ground and he prays. And the prayer is both intimate and desperate. It's intimate because he calls out to God as Father, Abba, Daddy, Papa. Such close connection. No one's prayed like that before. And yet it's also desperate. If you can take this cup from me, anything is possible with you, God. And yet it's also a determined prayer. Not my will be done, but your will be done. He battles to find determination to see through what he has started. But the disciples, who were meant to keep watch with him, do not keep watch with him. This is what the disciples are doing.
He returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Simon, he said to Peter, are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Once more he went away and prayed the same thing. When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They did not know what to say to him.
In his hour of deepest need, his disciples have let him down, and they have let him down badly. This is his final moment of doubt and battle and pain, and the disciples do not support him. They are not standing guard. They are not protecting him. They are not keeping watch. They are not taking up their crosses and following him like he's invited them to. They're not sharing in his suffering. They are not serving him.
Returning the third time, Jesus said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Enough! The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer.
Judas has returned. He had slipped off on the way to the garden, and now he returns, and he is at the head of a crowd, and they have swords and batons and clubs. And Judas approaches Jesus and betrays him in the most awful of intimate ways. He betrays him with a kiss. But Jesus is calm now. That is also in contrast to the ruckus that breaks out around him. The disciples, who knows, maybe they feel guilty for falling asleep. Maybe they're just confused. But there a fight breaks out and a sword is drawn. Someone gets his ear chopped off. In the midst of this, Jesus remains calm and steady. They take him and they bind him. And then they lead him away and they take him to the high priest, Caiaphas. And there gathered are all of the chief priests and the teachers and the elders of the law, the whole Sanhedrin, gathered together. They need to find a reason to put Jesus to death. Caiaphas has said this to them before. It is better for one man to die for the people than for the whole nation to be destroyed. What is meant to be a slickly orchestrated theatre actually turns into a bit of a black comedy of errors.
Many testified falsely against him, but their statements did not agree. Then some stood up and gave this false testimony against him. Yet even then their testimony did not agree. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?
Jesus remains silent.
And again the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?"
"I am," says Jesus. "I am. We know I am. We know this God Almighty, this Yahweh, the creator of heaven and earth. We know him. And how dare Jesus stand there and say, 'I am'?" The chief priest Caiaphas rips his robes. He is furious. His blood is curdling. And suddenly Jesus finds himself blindfolded and fists rain down on him, blow after blow after blow. Someone spits on him. Others join in, blow after blow after blow.
Very early in the morning, the chief priest with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin made their plans. So they bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "You have said so," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again Pilate asked him, "And you're going to answer? See of how many things they are accusing you of." But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed.
Pilate is struggling. He has no love of the Jewish people, but equally he has no love of being woken up at 6 a.m. in the morning to judge against a person that he has no love of. But to him, it doesn't add up. He wants to do the right thing. And yet also, it's Passover. The city is tense. It's like a boiling pot simmering, about to boil over. He has to do the right thing. He has to maintain order. And so, he offers to let Jesus go on reprieve. It's like a condemnation and a pardon in one. But what he doesn't realize is that the crowd that has gathered is not just a normal crowd. The crowd that has gathered is the Sanhedrin and the people that they have gathered to be the crowd. And so instead of accepting Pilate's offer, they cry out, "Crucify him!" Jesus remains silent, alone, undefended. Bruised, bloodied, and bound.
Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified.
So the imperial soldiers lead Jesus away. They beat him. They strip him naked. They beat him with rods and staffs and canes. They spit on him. They jostle him and shove him and spin him around. And they call out, mocking him, laughing, taunting, cursing. They drape a purple robe on him, and then they get this crown of thorns and they push it on his head until his head bleeds. And then they hail him, "Hail, King of the Jews." I wonder if Jesus falls, or I wonder if he manages to stay standing. I wonder if he's tired. He's been up all night. He hasn't eaten. I wonder if his face is swollen from where he's been struck. I wonder if he has blood in his eyes mingled with the sweat from his brow. I wonder if he's in pain where he's been beaten. I wonder if he's disoriented.
Again and again they struck him on the head with a staff and spit on him. Falling on their knees, they paid homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they let him out to crucify him.
Jesus is led out of the palace. It is past dawn. The city is awake, it is bustling and busy. People are filling the streets. This journey through Jerusalem is in stark contrast to the journey when they discreetly entered Jerusalem last night for Passover. The crowd around, I wonder if they look on. I wonder if they just ignore it. Another crucifixion. I wonder if they heckle, if they call out. Jesus' wounds, Jesus' humiliation, Jesus' shame, it is all public. His blood-stained clothes, his weaknesses, his shame, it's all on display now. At some point, coming out of the palace, they have picked up a cross. Not a full one, probably just a crossbar. Definitely bigger than ours. It cannot break. It has to be strong and sturdy. And Jesus is dragging it through the street, but he is struggling because it is heavy. He is stumbling, and then eventually he falls to the floor. The guards are not impressed. They grab a passerby, that's Simon of Cyrene. They get him to carry the cross, and then they jostle Jesus to his feet and push him onwards.
A certain man from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way in from the country, and they forced him to carry the cross. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it, and they crucified him. Dividing up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get.
Crucifixion in the Roman world, in any world actually, is a barbaric way to murder people. And in Rome, it is reserved for a particular kind of person. It's reserved for those who threaten the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome, the way of life. It is reserved for insurgents and terrorists. And in itself, crucifixion was a kind of imperial terrorism because the Romans needed it to be a deterrent. Therefore, it was very, very public, usually on the main highway or gate in and out of a city. And it was very, very final. Bodies were rarely released for burial. They were left out in the sun to decay, to be scavenged by wild dogs and carrion birds, left to mummify in the arid heat of the desert. It was also long and slow and painful. It could take days. A combination of asphyxia and dehydration and exhaustion, chronic multi-organ failure. The crossbar of our cross is laid on the ground and they hoist Jesus over it. They stretch his arms wide and then they nail through. Not his hands, they're not strong enough to hold the weight of a body. They nail through the ulna, through the gap between the ulna and the radius. They impale him, and then they drag the crossbar up and over that standing pole. Every time they jostle him and pull him about, the wounds are pulling on his arms, shuddering through his whole body.
Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So, you are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days. Come down from the cross and save yourself." In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Messiah, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross, that we may see and believe." Those crucified with him also heaped insults on him. It was 9 a.m. when they crucified him. The written notice of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m.
At 3 p.m, Jesus cries out in a loud voice, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And with a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last.
The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God."